Church of God the Eternal presents What is the Natural Body? This is the number two tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
Here in Romans, the sixth chapter, Romans 6 and verse 6, once again, just reiterating something that I gave to you last week. But I want us to have it as a premise to what I want to cover today. Romans 6 and verse 6, you will notice that it is called the body of sin. Knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed. The body of sin, then, is to be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. Now, as I have already said to you, a body is not a single entity in one sense of the word. It is one body, all right enough, but it is made up of many members. So it is imperative that we recognize the individuality of those members also. Here in Romans 12 and verse 4, Romans 12 and verse 4, it says, "For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office," and so then he gives the illustration of how it's set up, you know, the organizationally within the body of Christ. So here we have a body of sin, it's called, and it has many members. Now, I'm not going to deal with every member within the physical body, obviously. We're not going to talk about, you know, the pancreas and the liver and, you know, all sorts of members and so on. But there are specific members of our bodies that distinctly behave in specific ways. So it is necessary to recognize those members as opposed to, let's say, other components of the physical body, like our vascular system, our endocrine system, and all the other systems of the body also. So it is necessary to recognize that there are certain functional members of our body that we must have control over, or they have control over us. So I've reduced it now to a series of eight, or eight particular components or members of the physical body that we must give due consideration to and to know how to properly handle them. Now, it is amazing. They are, in general, areas that are involved in the entire sensory system of the body. We talk about the eyes, we talk about the ears, we talk about the hands, which basically deal with feeling. But we also then can relate to taste. It is interesting how the very concept of taste, the taste buds and so on, distinctly relate to unique problems that we experience and are used in another sense to relate to our spiritual relationship with God. We're going to start off so that I don't give any preeminence to one over another. I just put them in a series based on how they would fall out alphabetically. So that way you can... There's no way that I'm stressing one over another, except I'm holding a certain one for the end. And because it does influence every other one of these members of our bodies. So we're going to talk about the ear then. What about the natural ear? How do we sin with these body members? The ear plays a very significant area in some of our unique problems. Now, first I want us to recognize that there is an innate problem within the entire system as generated or created by God. In other words, God created us with a nature that is antithetical or is absolutely contrary to the truth of God, but so do we have unique problems with our individual members. They are not necessarily obedient in every sense of the word. So, first, let's notice that deafness, as we shall refer now to the ear, because you hear with the ear, and deafness is that which was created by God. By nature, we are deaf to the truths of God, the will of God. Here in Isaiah 6, Isaiah 6 and noting verse 10. We'll begin and just follow this thing through in a number of texts then that I want to give to you. Isaiah 6 and noting verse 10, we read, "Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and convert and be healed." So here is a statement of God that obviously you can see will relate to a number of these members of our bodies. But God himself now made us in such a way that we have a natural deafness. We do not hear. And that's not uncharacteristic whatsoever, because you go out and try to collar somebody on the street and get him to understand of the most significant, purposeful, and meaningful things in life, and he's probably going to rebuff you. He isn't going to be troubled 1 minute, so please don't go do it. That ear is stopped, and he is not going to change it at all. In other words, he will probably manifest his rebellious, defiant spirit and attitude. All right, here in Jeremiah 6 and verse 10, we're just noticing the natural state of that ear, and we'll notice other things concerning it a little later here. Jeremiah 6 and verse 10. The same verse. "To whom shall I speak and give warning, that they may hear? Behold, their ear is uncircumcised." So God even uses now this broad term that we're going to find referred to a number of times, a matter of circumcision. Circumcision, of course, becomes a physical principle, but it also has a very, very broad spiritual connotation. But there are uncircumcised eyes, and there are uncircumcised ears, and also uncircumcised hearts. So God says, "To whom shall I speak and give warning that they may hear?" So God is saying, "I know the makeup of these people. You know, I made them. Now, to whom am I going to give any warning? Because they're not going to hear it in the first place. Behold, their ear is uncircumcised, and they cannot hearken. Behold, the word of the Eternal is unto them a reproach, and they have no delight in it," which is generally true with human beings. They have no delight in it. They have no love or respect for it. And even those that are called manifested little love or respect or regard for the truth of God. They don't want to hear. Oftentimes, if it affects us emotionally in some way, it is amazing how quickly we can turn and rend to somebody else because we don't like what is said, rather than to weigh it carefully and judiciously and see if it has any pointed application so far as we're concerned. No, if it upsets us emotionally, if we don't like it and so on, we're going to do our level best to retaliate in one way or another. That's the natural nature with which we're born, and every one of you has that nature. Make no mistake about it, it's there. So God said that because of their uncircumcised heart, he said they're not going to listen. Why should he know? Because he made you thusly. He made all human beings that way. "Behold, the word of the Eternal is unto them a reproach." And you give them any specific instruction, you know, with regard to what God may say from the Bible, if it does not satisfy them at that moment, they will indeed turn and rend you. And if it does, become a reproach. In Matthew 13 and verse 15, Matthew 13 and verse 15, just dealing with the natural ear at this point. Matthew 13 and verse 15 says, "For this people's heart is waxed gross." Here now, Christ picked up on the very prophetic statement of Isaiah 6. "For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing." Their ears are dull of hearing. "And their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears." So there is a matter of volition involved also, as you can see here. Their ears are dull of hearing. They just don't respond. and all too frequently our ears can grow dull. If we do not keep, them finely tuned and keep in a proper relationship with God, it is amazing how many things we can miss because we emotionally react or respond, or because of negativism of one type or another. And it says, and their eyes they have closed. So it shows that even though eyes are closed, our ears have been opened, they nonetheless can lose their effectiveness by volition or will. We become dull of hearing. I don't mean deaf now, but we become dull of hearing by volition, because we don't keep ourselves alert, attentive, and in the proper relationship with God. We lose our perspective out of, for many reasons, and I won't go into the reasons. So the ears have to be kept sharpened, well attuned, so that we hear, that we're responsive. We hear and we act upon it. Now in Romans 11 and verse 18, Romans 11 and verse 18, all we're doing at this point now is getting an insight as to what the natural ear is like from the time of its creation. Romans 11 and verse 18 says, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Obviously, I have a wrong text here. Let me see if it's 10 and verse 18. Well, it isn't really the one I'm after. It shows, it's merely the continuation of the text showing the condition that naturally existed. In other words, the deafness of the ear. But let's pick it up from Acts 28 anyway. Acts 28, and I'm not sure why on that. Acts 28 and verse 27. Here, once again, is another one of the circumstances where I didn't get to go back through them as I normally like to. Acts 28 and verse 27, for the heart of this people is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and should be converted, and I should heal them. Now, I merely want to give this to you as a series of texts showing the natural condition of the ear. That's why the world out here does not hear God's word. That's why they're doing their own thing. That's why, you know, they may go down and they like to hear a certain element or a certain number of platitudes when they go before, you know, their so-called ministers or whatever. They'll hear platitudes, but they're not going to hear the word of God, because that word is going to cut like a sword, and they do not want to hear it. That's the natural condition of the ear now. That is the means, the manner in which we're born, the kind of an ear that we have when we are born. But let's see now a little more of the particular nature of the ear. Here in 2 Chronicles 24 and verse 19, 2 Chronicles 24, and let's note verse 19. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them again unto the Lord, and they testified against them, but they would not give ear. Here were ones now called and chosen of God, and so the natural ear, even though called or chosen of God, will resist. It isn't going to hear what it does not want to hear. Usually it's manifested in a kind of a defiant spirit where as it sends the signal to the brain, the mind of the individual is thinking on what it's going to say in retaliation or whatever. That's usually the manifestation of it. But it simply is not going to hear. So maybe we can understand then why God said in literally hundreds of places, hear, O Israel, hear, my people. Why? Because we do not normally hear. It's just not a part of us. We've got very, very dull ears, and they are stopped so that we will not hear what is said. In Ezekiel 12 and verse 2, this is the nature of man. Ezekiel 12 and verse 2. All of us came out of this, and we ought to be extremely cognizant of these conditions because we've been fighting them for a long time. That is, if we've been fighting ourselves, we certainly know that those circumstances prevail. Here in Ezekiel 12 and verse 2, it says, "Son of man, thou dwellest in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and see not. They have ears to hear, and they hear not. For they are a rebellious house." So they have ears to hear all right now, but they don't hear. They don't want to hear. See, there has to be something that changes the whole basic makeup of these physical members that we possess. Just naturally, we're not going to listen to anything that cuts across grain, that tells us we ain't what we thought we were. They don't like it at all. And they're going to categorically reject it if it does not come in some pleasing, palatable, acceptable manner. You know, put a little honey on it, you know, sugar it, you know, or do something with it, you know. We're not going to hear it. Well, all things don't come with honey on them. There are lots of things that come with an awful lot of vinegar. And we're still going to have to accept them for what they are. All right, next. It is amazing how the ear just naturally wants to hear wrong or error. It loves to get involved in these things. Just allow a good juicy story to get started. I don't care whether it's about somebody or a lot of people or a circumstance, and you find people gathering around like honey, or like bees do around the honey. They want to hear bad things. They won't hear the truth of God. They don't want that because that one cuts them to the quick. But if you talk about somebody else, you know, you got a nice, juicy story, people will give ear to that. They want to hear it. Here in Proverbs 17 and verse 4, Proverbs 17 and noting verse 4, get there in a minute. "A wicked doer giveth heed to false lips, and a liar giveth ear to a naughty tongue." You tell a nice, juicy, and a dirty story or whatever it is, and, you know, not all people, you know, I can just hear someone saying, "Well, that would never happen with me." Well, but you have your areas. And here is what God said. "Wicked doer giveth heed to false lips." I mean, if we have not come to recognize what we are by nature, we're going to give heed. That is, we're going to pay attention to false lips. And a liar, that is, if that is our makeup, and remember, lying is about as easy as it is to stand up and walk. If any one of you were to tell me today, just today alone, that you did not exaggerate or lie, that would be the first one for the day anyway. The toughest thing in the world is to avoid it. You bet it is. Because we'll either exaggerate, we will change by circumstance, our emotions will color it. We're going to do something. Because God said, "Let your words be few, for whatsoever is more than that cometh of sin." You just make a few statements and sin is already involved. That's how tough it is for human beings to master it, to overcome it. The Bible even says that he who says that he has not sinned is a liar and the truth is not in him. So we're all involved. It's a horrible situation. Now, if you can't recognize it, I guess there are some who are yet that blind and insensitive to the real truth of God. But when you come to really see it for what it is, and you begin to see yourself for what you really are, and you finally admit it, boy, it becomes a very, very damning picture. It's injurious, it is hateful, you come to just abhor the self. Because you can hardly open up your mouth but what you make some kind of a faux pas. A wicked doer giveth heed to false lips, and a liar giveth ear to a naughty tongue. Why, just, you know, create a situation. I don't care what it is, because I have to deal with him constantly. And then ask for a report up from the two sides. And any similarities are purely coincidental. You wouldn't even recognize it as the same story. Well, do you mean there were two events that occurred? No, I don't mean that at all. It was only one event. But two human beings telling about it. And that tells you the story. Now, were they both deliberately lying? No. That's one thing you learn early in the ministry. You just learn that human beings color it on the basis of their own emotions, their own input. Doesn't mean it's absolutely right. It's absolutely right in their minds, yes. But it isn't absolute. Because the divergence of opinion is a proof of that. Do we then listen? You know, the Bible speaks about the one that comes first with a cause is always going to be heard. I've even seen situations where people will scramble just as fast as they can to get there first. Why do they do that? Because it is a known characteristic. If you can get there first, you've already made the mark. Then the other fellow has an uphill battle from that point on. Our ears just love to hear those things. Now, I'm going to get into some other parts of this later on because our ears were not created for that purpose. I wonder why God gave us ears. To hear all the nice, juicy tidbits about everybody else? Was that the purpose? Must have been some reason for them. Because I'll tell you, when we start losing that hearing, we get pretty excited about it. We don't want to lose it. We do not want to lose the capability of one single member of our body. It's not complete without it. And my, oh my, the expense you will go to, or I'll go to, I better be very careful because I've already got a pair of them on up here, to make sure that those eyes stay with you. Not satisfied yet, are you? You want to see more. Or you go down and you spend $500, $600, $700, $800, $1,000, $2,000 to put a little plug in that ear that will kind of make things reverberate just a little bit louder so you can hear again. Oh, we spend lots of money to make sure that hearing is good. But for what reason? Is it because we want to hear God's word? Is it because we want to hear the praises of God? Or is it because we're afraid we're not going to hear that juicy tidbit over the back fence? Which? Then also, the ear has the tendency, just the natural tendency. See, there are natural proclivities in that ear. Remember, you started out deaf to things that really count. Oh, I know, children come into this world and they hear. They can hear physical sounds, but they don't hear spiritual things. They were not born to hear those things unless somebody teaches them. And then only when God unstops that ear and makes it responsive But what is then the natural tendency? There is a natural tendency in everything in nature to degenerate. A plant will come up, it will mature, and it fades and tends to go back to nothingness. So do our ears. Here in Proverbs 28 and verse 8, it shows that we have an ear that naturally tends to turn away from the laws and the statutes of God. Unless it is kept alert, unless it is kept active, unless it is tuned up consistently by certain exercises that God Himself ordained, it tends to become lethargic and indifferent. Proverbs 28, and noting verse 8. He that by usury and unjust gain, verse 9 actually is the one I want here, increases his substance, he shall gather it for him that will pity the poor. He that turneth away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer shall be abomination. So the ear can be turned away from hearing the law of God. Well, now you can't turn something away that was never rightly oriented in the first place, can you? So if it is now turning away, it means it was in the proper relationship at one time. So the natural inclination is for the ear to become dull and to turn away from the laws and the statutes of God. We just are not as responsive at times as we should be, and unless we can consistently bring that ear back and we have control over it, we are going to allow it to become lethargic and indifferent, and in a sense, it will dominate in our lives. It'll do what it wants to do. Now, why does it do that? Well, we're going to get to that when we understand that last principle that I was telling you about. Now, in Zechariah 7, Zechariah the 7th chapter, and verses 11 through 13. Zechariah 7, and beginning in verse 11. But they refused to hearken as an adamant stone, lest they should hear the law. They're not going to do it because they're afraid of what's going to happen. You'll never know how many times I've had people say, when somebody has said, well, why don't you talk with someone? No, I know. I know what would happen if I did. See, they're already aware of it. They will not do it because they think if they don't ever have to hear it, I guess they're not conscience stricken. It's not going to bother them. It's not going to trouble them. But they'll refuse to hear because they don't want it that way. That's the reason. All right? We ourselves stop our own ears. We don't want to hear if we don't want to. And we're going to make sure that we don't. We'll stop our ears. Well, we're going to see something about that a little later here. Yea, they made their hearts as an adamant stone, lest they should hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts hath sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. All right, next, the ear wants to hear the length and breadth of gossip. It just wants to hear these things. Ecclesiastes 1:8. Ecclesiastes 1, and let's note verse 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The ear that with which you were born does not want to be left out. How come they didn't tell me? I didn't hear that. Oh, we don't like getting left out. We want to hear it. You know, telephone companies know that. You know, there used to be a system whereby all you had to do was lift up the old receiver, you know, and you can get in on the gossip on the line. And of course, nobody ever took those receivers down. They didn't want to hear it. Why do they make movies on that? I mean, complete movies made on that very concept. Doesn't exist. No, we want to hear any of the juicy tidbits, as I said, and especially when it gets into gossip, that we really want to hear. That's the natural inclination. Now, obviously, it ought not be as strong within us. I hope that we've overcome something. And we can say that we're not interested in that. I wouldn't say 100%. And I doubt if we've gotten there yet. But we like to hear. All right? Then also the natural ear listens only to its own advice. Why, it's always open to whatever proceeds out of our hearts. Man, it hears every word of that. Make no mistake about it. Notice what he says here in Jeremiah 7, 24 through 26. Jeremiah 7, 24 through 26. But they hearkened not, nor inclined their ear, but walked in the counsels and in the imagination of their evil heart, and went backward and not forward. Since the day that your fathers came forth out of the land of Egypt unto this day, I have even sent unto you all my servants the prophets, daily rising up early and sending them. Yet they hearken not unto me, nor incline their ear, but hardened their neck. They did worse than their fathers. What did he say? But they hearkened not, nor inclined their ear, but walked in the counsels and in the imagination of their evil heart. They heard what they wanted to hear from their own hearts, but they didn't hear anything from God. They spurned it, and they rejected it. Now, in Acts 7, the ear is also uncircumcised. Acts 7. So it means, if we're talking about circumcision in this sense as a matter of cutting off our nature, our defiant and rebellious spirit and so on, then circumcision of the ear means to cut off those tendencies, to eliminate them. All right, Acts 7. And noting verses 51 and 57. Acts 7. And let's read first verse 51. You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears. So they're uncircumcised then. The natural ear is an uncircumcised ear. Well, then what is a circumcised ear? It's one that refuses to indulge in these iniquitous traits of the ear. It refuses it. You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you do always resist the Holy Spirit. As your fathers did, so do you. Verse 57 said, then they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears. Well, why in the world would they force somebody to, forcing plugs into their ears so they couldn't hear? Why? Because they were hearing what they didn't want to hear. They were refusing to accept it. Why didn't they listen and see if there were any value and accept it, if there were value? No, they didn't want to hear it. Because their minds were already made up. Then they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears and ran upon him with one accord. Why, they'll even murder to keep from having to hear the truth. They don't want to hear it. In 2 Timothy 4, 3 through 4. 2 Timothy 4. Beginning in verse 3. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. Itching ears. That is, they want to hear something new. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. This is what happened in the last days. They were going to heap their own teachers that wanted to, would teach what they wanted to hear. Why did they secure teachers that would preach fancifully whatever they wanted to hear? Because they did not want to hear the truth. And if they can hear what they want to hear, they can delude themselves into believing that they are Christian. That is the sobering and serious part of it. You know, the Bible says that there is going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth in those days. That's critical. There must be some reason for that. Why? So he said they shall turn away their ears from the truth. What this says is that in the last days, somebody was hearing it, and they deliberately turned away their ears from it. I've studied enough English. I know what words mean. And there is no English professor on the face of this earth that will tell you anything outside of that from that verse. They knew it. They did not like it. They had it, and they turned away from it. That's the exact meaning of those words. They turned away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. They didn't give up a belief, but they turned to fables. All right, so it is with the uncircumcised ear. It's a problem to us. And it still is. It's a problem to every one of us. You still have natural ears. Very easy to turn from anything you don't want to hear. You don't like it. It doesn't suit your fancy or mine. And we can turn away from it. We'll stop our ears. But if it becomes something, you know, real juicy and we like to hear it, then we'll give ear to it. We'll pay attention to those things. But now what about the eyes? We've got natural eyes too. And they're flesh members. We're naturally blind. That doesn't mean now that they're not born seeing. They see physical things. But we are born with eyes that do not comprehend truth. Here in 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 9, 1 Corinthians 2, and noting verse 9, it says, but as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard. Neither has entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. Eye hath not seen it. Now, why in the world would he say the eye hath not seen it? The eye cannot see spiritual things in the first place. And God is spirit, and so are his words. His truth is spirit. And yet God uses the eye as the representative instrument indicating either blindness or knowledge. So in a spiritual sense, we are born then not seeing. We're like those kittens. We don't see. So we are naturally blind then from birth, spiritually. In John 12 and verse 40, John 12, and noting verse 40, it says, "He hath blinded their eyes and hardened the heart, that they should not see with their eyes, nor understand with their heart." We're going to see a little later why God uses the eyes. You know, there have been many, many poems written on it. There have been many, many clever little limericks or statements made about the eyes. The eyes, you know, is the window of the soul, and so on. But you know what is interesting? That also the eyes reveal character and intelligence. God said from the beginning that he blinded the eyes. So we were born then, naturally, blind to the truth. Our ears couldn't hear it, and we can't see it. But then in due time, at the appointed time, God is going to strip the blindness from our eyes. He's going to allow us to see, to comprehend. And at that time, we become chargeable, accountable. Now, what about those natural eyes then? We're born with natural eyes, but what are their proclivities or their traits? They are deceptively perverse. They see only what they want to see. Very, very selective. You ever seen accident reports? Why, you get the two reports from two individuals and you wouldn't even know it was the same accident. Well, did you see this? Why, yes, I saw it. But so did the other one. But the other one didn't see what you saw, and you didn't see what the other one saw. In Luke 11, verses 34 through 36. The light of the body, guess where the old, let's say, wise man or whoever it was that made the statement, you know, eyes are the window of the soul. Guess where he got that information? The light of the body is the eye. Therefore, when thine eye is single, wait a minute. Does he mean one eye? No, that's not what he's talking about. He is talking about the orientation of that eye. Therefore, when thine eye is single, the whole body also is full of light. Honesty, openness, candor, integrity. Which then obviously means that we're not born with those characteristics, but in blindness we must be extremely perverse and deceptive in what we see. When thine eye is single, it has one objective, one purpose, and it is adamant and it is determined in the pursuit of that. The whole body also is full of light. But when thine eye is evil, yeah, that's right, eyes can be evil. When thine eye is evil, thy body is full of darkness. Take heed, therefore. That is, beware. Take note. Be cognizant of. Take heed, therefore, that the light which is in thee be not darkness. If thy whole body, therefore, be full of light, having no part dark, the whole shall be full of light, as when the bright shining of a candle doth give thee light. In other words, the illumination of every nook and cranny of the room, of circumstance, of relationship. When the eye is single, it is like a brilliant light. How many things did we surreptitiously or deliberately miss? The eye is deceptively perverse. Deuteronomy 16 and 19. Deuteronomy 16 and noting verse 19. Thou shalt not wrest judgment. Thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise. Isn't that interesting? You mean when you hand me a gift and put it in my hands, I don't see as well as before I got the gift. That's right. Because what I see from that point on is colored or tainted. Do you realize that there is not a physical member of your body that has any sensitivity whatsoever unless it passes through the brain and is translated? Now, it is amazing when that nerve center receives the impression up here in the brain how a little gift will change what you see up here. Oh, frequently. So we can blind one another by giving lots of gifts, because we just don't see clearly after that. Now also, it is interesting how critical is the observation of the eye. I mean, we think we see everything, and what we see, we censor, we ridicule, we criticize. But when we understand that we probably did not understand, and that what we thought we saw, we didn't see, we begin to realize that what we said, we should not have said. That's our problem. In Luke 6 now, Luke the 6th chapter, and I already have news for you, it's going to take more than two. And I don't want any comments from certain people. Luke 6. Verse 41. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye? You mean somebody's running around here with a little sliver in the eye and another one with a great big beam in it? No. It's only translation. That's what we receive up here in the brain. We think that that the only thing we have is a mote. I mean, a little tiny sliver that you have to have a magnifying glass to find it. But boy, what we see in somebody else is a beam. So the eye, in its own right, then, is ultra critical. but it's never accurate. It's amazing how a sliver can so distort our vision that we think we see a bee. Isn't it? But you ask many people and they know they've seen them. They could even tell you what it looks like. So he said then, "And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite." You mean when you get a sliver in your eye, you're a hypocrite? No, it's all a matter of translation. What we're receiving up here from these evil members of our physical bodies. And when we receive this information up here in our brain, what we think we see, what we think we ascertain or comprehend, we translate it into something that is either a mote or a beam. And God said it isn't so. It just isn't so. All right, then let's notice also 1 John 2. 1 John 2, we're going to just pick this text up, and that's going to have to be it for today. I don't know where that hour got. 1 John 2, and beginning in verse 9. He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness even until now. He doesn't know it, but he's in darkness. He that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. You stumble only when it's dark. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness and walketh in darkness and knoweth not whither he goeth, because that darkness hath blinded his eyes. So sometimes in our reinterpretation of events and circumstances critically, we walk around in darkness and don't know how many times we're stumbling over our own impediments. That's a part of the problem with the eyes. I'm going to have to pick up the rest of it another time.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is the Natural Body? This was the number 2 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.